Let's kick this show off and go down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. Welcome in Robbie Stanley, the Nashville correspondent for NHL.com. Robbie, thanks so much for doing this, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, Will. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. And we have to start with Pekka Rinne. We will get to the game in just a second. But just your thought on Pekka Rinne's performance last night in the playoffs, specifically on home ice. It was a massive disappointment, continued to be a narrative. And I guess, to, you know, kind of a two-part question, first of all, on his performance, and then second of all, were you at all surprised at how quick that leash was last night in Game 7?
Well, I think if you just take a look at this Jets-Predator series, it was almost expect the unexpected the entire time, and I expected a lot of different things last night. Pekka Rinne being pulled 10 minutes and change into the game was certainly not one of those things, and I mean, he just allowed two atrocious goals. I mean, there's no other way to get around it. Those are goals you can't allow in any game, much less a Game 7 of the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I think it was the right move by Peter Laviolette at the time. I mean, so far in that series, I mean, you could tell when Pekka Rinne was on, and you could pretty much tell for the most part when he was off right from the beginning of the game. So I thought it was the right move by Peter Laviolette. I thought UC Saros came in after that and made some key saves, especially there in the second period, where the Predators really, up until that point, had not been playing well at all. I mean, I don't think it really mattered who was in goal at that point. Winnipeg was just dominating that second period, even though they were already leading the game 2-1, which was a little bit surprising to me. I thought we'd see a little bit more pushback out of the Predators, but we did not see that. But there's no question, Pekka Rinne had a great regular season. He's probably going to win the Vezina Trophy, but it was a disappointing playoff for him. And you know, there were times where he didn't get a lot of help defensively in front of him, which is surprising with the defensemen the Predators have on their roster. But they needed him to be better in the playoffs, and it was not a good postseason run for Pekka Rinne. And one wonders how many of those good postseason runs he's got left in him. I mean, he was phenomenal last year, obviously, in their run to the Stanley Cup final. But he's getting up there on age right now. I mean, he's got one year left on his deal after this year. And, you know, who knows what the future is after that. UC Saros, I think everybody would agree, is their goaltender of the future. When does that process start for him? So I do wonder if this was the last chance or one of the last chances for Pekka Rinne to make a deep playoff run.
Now, this series certainly was weird with Winnipeg winning three times at Bridgestone Arena, but overall, the Preds did struggle on home ice in these playoffs. They finished below 500, just 3 wins in 7 games in the postseason. I know it was certainly stressed all year by this team to get home ice advantage in the playoffs. Is it too easy to correlate that to Rene's performance, or is there more in terms of their struggles in the playoffs on home ice?
I think there was more. Rinne was certainly a big part of that and a big part of why they weren't able to be successful at home. But there were just times, really all playoffs long, even in the Colorado series, where they just looked out of whack. I mean, even they won games 1 and 2 of the Colorado series, but it wasn't very pretty. I mean, there were Colorado at times really controlled both of those games, even though they lost the opening 2 games of that series. So there was never really a time at home during the playoffs where the Predators looked like the team that won the President's Trophy with 117 points in the regular season, which is very surprising because, like you said, literally from day one of training camp this year, the Predators made a point of emphasis to talk about how important home ice advantage was going to be for this team in the playoffs and how much of a difference maker they thought it could be after what they went through last year in the playoffs, losing in the Stanley Cup final to Pittsburgh. They really felt like if they had home ice advantage in that series, that maybe it could have ended up being the difference. So for them to come out and be 3-4 in the playoffs this year at home, after being a good home team in the regular season and how dominant they were in the postseason last year, that was probably the most surprising part of all of this to me. Rinne certainly was a big part of that, but there was never really a time where the Predators looked on and looked like the team they were in the regular season at home during these playoffs.
Robbie Stanley's our guest. He's the Nashville correspondent for NHL.com down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline and Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And we mentioned Rinne off the top, Robbie, but just overall in that Game 7 last night, watching it on television, it just seemed bizarre. I don't know if shock's the right word, but it just seemed weird to see the Preds so out of sync they could never really get going. And as a result, it showed in the scoreboard with a 5-1 score. Yeah, you can look at those two horrible goals early on allowed by Pekka Rinne, but PK Subban scores the goal, maybe a little bit of life going into the intermission, lucky to be down 2-1, but they just never really seemed to be able to get in sync in the final 40. Would you agree with that?
I would. I agree totally with that. And there were several times in this series where they kind of looked like they were panicking a little bit. I mean, and that's also surprising when you have a team that's been through so many playoff series and that core group has been together for 3 or 4 years now and have been through a lot of things in the playoffs. And there were times throughout this series, like even in game five, when they played pretty well for the first 30 minutes and Winnipeg scored the first goal, it just seemed like the Predators totally hit the panic button after that. And I felt similar to that last night, maybe not to the extreme of game five last night in game seven. But once Winnipeg got that 2-0 lead, even after PK Subban made it 2-1, Winnipeg just totally shut them down. I mean, they couldn't break out of their own zone. They couldn't get through the neutral zone. They couldn't establish anything from offensive zone time in the second and third periods after that either. So Winnipeg deserves a lot of credit for that, I think. They did a really good job of locking the Predators down and playing kind of a three-quarter of ice game and really making sure that they were making life very difficult for the Predators breaking out of their own end. But the Predators just looked sloppy all night, and they really looked sloppy for the majority of these playoffs, and it finally caught up to them.
Now, everyone expected this series to happen, top two teams in the Western Conference in round two. It ended up happening, and the way that these two teams played each other in the regular season, we were all expecting a historic or a classic series. No team won two games in a row. It went seven games. Did this series live up to the hype for you?
You know, when you look at those numbers and you look at the numbers side by side, I have to say yes. But the games themselves were very different than I thought they would be. I mean, in the regular season, it was back and forth. It was trading punches. It was one-goal games. It was a lot of really close, high-paced, fun back-and-forth action. And if you take a look at the numbers as the series as a whole, they all look pretty close. But the individual games themselves, a lot of times, were a blowout. I mean, the 5-1 in Game 7, the Jets dominated in Game 5 at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators dominated in Game 6 with a 4-0 win. So, yes, it went seven games. And I think if you look at the end of the series numbers and add them all up, it looks like a classic series. In many ways, it was. I thought the hockey on both sides when both teams were on was really good. But I don't know if they were ever really on at the same time, with maybe the exception of Game 2 in Nashville that the Predators won in double overtime. So from that standpoint, no, it didn't live up to the hype for me. But I think if you look at all the numbers and kind of break down everything as a series as a whole, you'll end up finding that the numbers are close.
It certainly has been a narrative in Nashville. I know it's not an easy question to answer, Robbie, but outside of Johansson, Forsberg, probably Subban as well, many disappointing efforts from the Preds in these playoffs. But everyone's looking at that second line. Specifically, maybe it's unfair to put it on one guy, but I got to wonder where Kyle Turris was in these playoffs. Any ideas to what was going on in terms of why Nashville was never able to get that depth scoring in these playoffs?
Yeah, that's been probably the biggest storyline around here as well. I mean, Kyle Turris was a complete no-show in these playoffs. And, you know, when you've got some scoring up front like the Predators have had all season long, you feel pretty good about your balance and your depth heading into the playoffs. But once that second line just completely goes AWOL, there's nothing really behind that can keep up with a team like the Jets. You have Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine and Paul Stastny and all these different guys going at the same time. And Kevin Fiala, Kyle Turris, and Craig Smith, they did not have a good playoffs. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Kyle Turris had 3 assists in the entire playoffs. He had 2 in the first 2 games of this Winnipeg series, and that was it. I mean, he didn't score a goal the entire playoffs. He's about to get paid $6 million a year for 6 more years after this, that the Predators signed him to an extension when they traded for him back in November. So it was a strange thing. I'm interested to see. They're going to have their media availability tomorrow as they kind of close out their season. And I'm interested to see how many of those guys were dealing with something, because it just never looked like they were on. It never looked like they were in sync. And the Winnipeg Jets just did a really good job of totally shutting that line down and making them a complete non-factor. And there's no question Kyle Turris had a very, very disappointing playoff run for this team.
Kind of last one on the playoffs, and then we'll kind of shift gears towards the summer a little bit. But a fairly significant price, similar to the Kyle Turris one. I know he was involved in that huge three-way deal. But the Preds paid a pretty decent price and surprised some with what they paid to get in Ryan Hartman. He's an RFA this summer. He's still young. But do you expect him to be a guy who is identified as maybe a part of Nashville's core moving forward? What's the future for Ryan Hartman? How do you think his fit was with this group in Nashville?
I don't think it worked out the way that they wanted it to. I mean, you brought him in to be obviously a bottom six forward and a depth piece that you could rely on. And I don't think they could rely on Ryan Hartman. I mean, there were times during this playoff run in both series where he was a healthy scratch. And, you know, when you give up a first round pick to bring a guy like that in, that's obviously not what you're looking for come playoff time. I do think they're going to re-sign him. I do think because they gave up a first round pick and that he is so young and there is some upside there that he's shown so far in his career, he'll be back. I don't think they're going to give him a long-term deal. I don't think he's earned a long-term deal with the Predators at this point in his career. So it's going to be a prove-it year for Ryan Hartman next year. I mean, you give up a big price, so you're willing to bring him back in and give him another chance. But if you're asking me, I don't think that trade worked out like David Poile and the Nashville Predators thought it would.
Robbie Stanley's our guest from NHL.com out of Nashville. Preds falling in round two after winning the President's Trophy and falling in the Stanley Cup Final a year ago. No picks till round three. I know you put it out there today. It seemed like, you know, or last night, I guess it was on Twitter, it was an all-in year for Nashville. So you can't really look at this as a success. You got a lot of replies from fans in Nashville on Twitter. What's the sense of this fan base right now in terms of where this team is and their outlook in the next season?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody knows that this was the year they were supposed to really compete and try to go win the Stanley Cup for the first time. It's not really like this team is going anywhere. I mean, largely their core is largely locked up for the next few years. And
right. Like
I said before, Pecorine's got one more year left on his deal, and then Juuse Saros is a restricted free agent this summer. But you've got your top four of Josi, Subban, Ellis, and Ekholm. All of those guys are locked down at least for next year. And then next summer, Ryan Ellis's contract comes up. So that's probably the biggest order of business for David Poile this summer, is trying to figure out a way to make sure to make Ryan Ellis's new contract work and see if you can start working on that, because that's probably going to be his number one priority next season. But other than that, I mean, the Predators really have most of their team coming back next year. I mean, Scott Hartnell is an unrestricted free agent. Mika Salamaki is a restricted free agent, and Alexi Emelet is an unrestricted free agent. Other than that, they're in pretty good shape next year and should have mainly their same team coming back, and maybe an addition of Ellie Tolvanen into the lineup full-time next year as well, too. So it's largely going to be the same team, largely going to be the same group. They should be competitive once again, but I do think there is some questions now of, is this roster built for the playoffs as currently constructed, or do they need to tweak a few things heading into next year?
Maybe not, you know, obviously they're disappointed with the way it went in the playoffs, but There seems to be a sense from Nashville that they love the acquisition of Nick Bonino. He seems to be a perfect guy for this team.
Yeah, and I think he really played well for the most part in the playoffs. I mean, that line didn't have as an effective of a series against the Winnipeg Jets as they did in the first round against Colorado, where they were playing really well defensively against that MacKinnon line and also contributing offensively as well. So not quite the same level of success for that Bonino line in the second series as there was in the first series. But I think in the playoffs, Nick Bonino did so many little things that really kind of stood out to why he was such a valuable player when he was with the Pittsburgh Penguins when they won back-to-back Stanley Cups. And if you look at the offensive numbers in the regular season with the contract that Nick Bonino signed, making $4.1 million per year, it's probably not there. I mean, the numbers probably aren't there to justify that contract, but I do think you have to remember that he was hurt heading into the season. He got hurt again in training camp, was recovering from off-season surgery, and then got hurt, I don't know, five or six games into the regular season. So it really took him half of the season to really catch up and get his legs back underneath him. I thought he did that. He played much better in the second half of the year, and I thought he was really good for the most part in the playoffs. So I do think that fans around here really feel like Nick Bonino is a guy that's going to be a part of this core moving forward. And then the playoffs that he was able to put together, that's really what they envisioned when they signed Nick Bonino last summer.
Two more for you. The first one is with goaltenders. I know we talked a lot about Rene off the top. You mentioned the 1 year left. Saros is an RFA. He's only 23 years old. Do you expect it to be a long-term deal for Saros? What does that deal look like ideally? And is it just as easy to say Rene rides this contract out and they hand it to Saros? I know it's, you know, kind of impossible to predict, but it sure feels like that.
Yeah, it certainly does feel like that. And, you know, Rene's got 1 year left with $7 million left, so he'll be back next year, obviously. And I do think he'll be their starting goaltender, at least to start next year. But if I'm the Predators and you're trying to figure out what Juuse Saros' next contract is, I think that he's shown enough at this point to at least be willing to have the conversation to make it a long-term deal. I mean, he's been really, really good for them all year long. He was pretty good for them for the most part in the role that he's been asked. Now, we all know there's a difference between being a backup goalie and playing in 25, 30 games per year and being a starter goalie where you're playing 60, 65 games. And obviously, we don't know how Saros is going to respond to that when that day comes. But I do think he's shown enough to prove that he is the goaltender of the future for this Predators team. And I would be comfortable, if I were David Poile, at least having the conversation of making sure that you can at least bring the long-term deal on the table. That way you're set and you're ready to go when Pecorine's contract does expire next summer.
And last one before we let you go, kind of away from the team and more in the front office, because everybody's been talking ever since the Minnesota Wild move on from Chuck Fletcher. The sense is that Paul Fenton is going to leave and take that job in Minnesota. What do you read in that situation? Because obviously Fenton has been the right-hand man for Poile for a long time, but it does feel like this is the opportunity because of that relationship with Craig Leopold that Paul Fenton is going to leave to Minnesota. Do you believe that's going to happen?
Yeah, I do. I think it's the right opportunity for Paul Fenton. And to be honest with you, I'm surprised that he hasn't gotten an opportunity like this before with as long as he's been around David Poile and just kind of the tag team they've been able to put together for the last several years in Nashville. I mean, he's been around David Poile for a very long time, and I think he's well-respected in hockey circles around the league. So I do think he's going to go to Minnesota. I think it's a long time coming for Paul Fenton, and then the question becomes, what do the Predators do after that to kind of fill that void? But I do think Fenton will be gone. I think it's a good fit for him in Minnesota. You mentioned the relationship that he has with Craig Leopold up there. So I think that will happen, and the Predators are going to be forced to make some changes in their front office for the first time in a while.
I know it was a disappointing year. I appreciate your time, Robbie. As always, I'm sure we'll catch up again in the summer as things start to unfold for this Nashville team. But thanks for giving us some time today.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me.
You bet. There's Robbie Stanley, the Nashville correspondent for NHL.com.